So if you could be here around 9, that would be great. Okay?
Well, listen here.
Hello, and welcome to Love After Lockup. Haha, okay. I'm Miss H, and today Mr. O and I will be talking about Season 3, Episode 5 of Love After Lockup. This week, Destiny finds out Sean's real age. Quaylen has to decide between who to hug first, Chevelle or Quaylandria. Jessica and Maurice contemplate making a run for Vegas. John tries to get Christiana to the halfway house on time. Scott gets a steak dinner and cake to share with Lindsay? Tyrese tells his family a little more about Chandra. If you like what you hear, please support us and leave a 5-star rating, or any other constructive comments are welcome. And if you watch 90 Day Fiancé, check out our other podcast channel, 90 Day MK, Teachable Moments with Miss H and Mr. O. Thanks, stay safe, and enjoy.
Hello, Miss H.
Hello, Mr. O.
How are things?
Things are going okay. School is right around the corner.
For you, I got a couple weeks, but man, I'm gearing up. I'm the webmaster for my school, so I'm getting all the stuff that this needs to go on the website. This needs to go on the website. Put this on the website too. So it's work starting to come in.
Yeah, I'm frantically trying to put together all my syllabi and gearing up.
Oh, I'm going to stay back because they make me work entirely too many days, like in-service days before the students get there. So I try not to do any work before then because I have plenty of time to do it.
Yeah, maybe I should adopt that philosophy. All right, but we're here to not talk about school. We're here to talk about Love After Lockup.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Who do you want to start with?
I will start with... Let me start with Scott and Lindsay.
Okay.
All right. So the plane has landed. And Scott is ready at the small regional airport with his limo and his steaks. The passengers are deplaning on the tarmac, and Scott is desperately trying to look through the dark windows for Lindsay, who never emerges. Scott anxiously wanders the airport looking for her in case he missed her, and even asks the flight crew when they come off the plane about it. But nobody has any answers. He's slightly nervous that Lindsay has pulled a fast one on him, but he thinks the more likely scenario is that she didn't get released for some reason and then had no way to contact him to let him know. So he calls the prison, but it's outside business hours, so absurdly, he'll have to call in the morning to find out whether or not she's been released. Then he calls Brenda and Miley Grace, Lindsay's mother and daughter, to break the bad news and tell him his theories. But again, he literally has no way of knowing exactly what's going on right now. Soon, Larry the limo driver, having seen everyone else leave the airport, comes in to see what's up. Scott tells Larry what happened, and Larry estimates that there's probably about a 90% chance that Scott has been defrauded here. But he only says that to us, not to Scott. Now that Scott has given up on Lindsay showing up tonight, he can't let the steak and cake go to waste, so Scott and Larry sit outside the airport and eat the romantic dinner, which Larry, and then Larry hears out Scott's problems. It was like a, you know, limo driver bartender kind of guy.
Yeah.
All right, so which do you think is right? Scott's theory that the Bureau of Prisons is to blame, or Larry's theory that it's Lindsay that's to blame?
Oh, I'm sure there was something at the prison where something happened where she couldn't, you know, get out that particular day. I would be curious to see who is in charge of the flight because uh-huh. She does have to get to the halfway house. So that's the reason why I feel like, you know, she's not defrauding him, because unless she sneaked past him in some like sneaky stealth way, she right. still has to make it to the halfway house.
And that particular halfway house, not just any halfway house. That's the
right.
one she's like assigned to and registered to.
Yeah. So I kind of feel like she would be in big trouble if she wasn't there. So I just kind of feel like there has to have been something. And that kind of sucks, though, if Scott is the one who had to pay for that flight, because now he's going to have to last minute pay for another flight.
That's true.
For her to get mm-hmm. on. So that's why I said I'd be interested to know who is actually responsible for paying for that flight, because if it's the actual prison system, which I don't know, I can't imagine that they would pay to transfer you somewhere.
I guess not. It would make sense if they were transferring you to another prison, they would pay for that flight. Absolutely. But
right.
to be like, we're releasing you, especially given what we see with everybody else, the amount of care and, you know, things they give to the people that they release. is not really high. It's pretty much, here's the curb. I'm kicking you to it. Get out.
Right. Let go and let God, like, you figure out your life. Oh, but make it to the halfway house.
But, and that's what I was really confused about. It's like, how does she get to the airport? Like, does she have, like, a marshal with her to do this? I don't know, like, how this would work.
Because is she even capable? She doesn't have a phone, it doesn't seem like, because Scott says he bought her.
He bought her the phone. So he has her phone, and they just don't care. And so it's one of those things that was like, I feel like if she was still in the prison, she could be like, let me make a phone call. Right?
Right.
And so it's like something almost in between. Like, I think they might have let her out and she just didn't make her flight, because we've seen that before too. Everybody else, nobody gets out of prison on time. They always show up, supposed to get out at 10, and then like they're sitting there at 2 and they walk out the gates, and it's like, yay? Like, and so that's my theory, is I totally blame the Bureau of Prisons, but I don't know that she is still in the prison.
Yeah, it's hard to say. Let's kind of talk about Scott. I mean, through this episode, I actually kind of like the guy as a guy. He seems like a good guy. Like, I thought it was incredibly generous of him to share his meal with the limo driver. He didn't have to do that.
No, absolutely not. I liked his, like, I did kind of like his on the phone talking to the prisons. He's like, wait, you can't tell me, or you don't want to tell me? Like, which one is it? Like, that's.
I thought he was firm but polite.
Right.
Like, he wasn't too offensive and he didn't get too angry. Like, I like him as a guy. But then I think about who he is in terms of, he wants to date this young, cute little thing. And that's, to me, just such, gross. Right. Like, at his age, like, it just seems so inappropriate. But then even in dealing with all of this and the way he talks about Lindsay, it's almost like he's fatherly towards her. Like, that's what occurred to me. It was like, this is how a dad would react in this exact same situation.
Right. It is. And we do know that he was a dad and he took great pride in being a dad. And so, like, and you hate to, you know, think that that's what he was really looking for, is another, like, child. But, you know, and that, because that makes it even creepier. Than what he's into
it definitely does. But it does make me wonder a little bit, that is that somehow weirdly affecting him psychologically, where he does want to take care of someone.
Right. And I don't, I say that. I don't think he thinks of her as a daughter type figure. No. Absolutely not. But
especially because he had a son and, you know,
it's the idea of it. One of the things he's looking for in a relationship is someone that needs him to take care of them. Like, totally makes sense.
Yeah, it does. So he's just, I have mixed feelings about him. It's like, when I look at Lindsay, I just feel like, oh, you're just such a, like, a creeper, and, like, you're really taking advantage of her age.
Right.
But then there's other moments where you're like, yeah, but you're a pretty decent guy. And as long as you're both, like, understanding that this is a transactional relationship, you know, it's like, you're both consenting adults.
Yeah, you are. I mean, it's tricky because, I don't know, they kind of introduced him with that, you other 50-year-olds can eat your hearts out. Right.
Yeah. But, like, that definitely makes him more creepy.
But I feel like since then, and I think production's really good at getting people in the confessionals when they're talking about, like, how attractive are they? And aren't you excited to have sex with them and things like that, that can make people sound creepy really easily. That's a really easy edit.
Yeah. So this is actually very much reminding me of 90 Day Fiancé, Michael and Juliana. You know, like, when you see Michael and Juliana together, you're kind of like, this is a couple that makes sense. I really feel like there's a lot of love, like, here. She doesn't seem like kind of this user type. And it's almost like you kind of almost forgive that they have pretty much the same age difference as Scott and Lindsay between them. And, you know, you kind of grow to, like Michael and Juliana, and they're, like, kind of an endearing couple, and you kind of feel like they're for real. And I kind of feel like Scott and Lindsay is, like, the Michael and Juliana of Love After Lockup.
Right. I can see that, especially because the kid factor, right? Because when we had Michael and them in 90 Day Fiancé, those kids were amazing, right? And it was hard to be like, well, how can this dude be such a bad dude if his kids are so awesome? Like, that doesn't.
And he's so good with the children and raised some pretty funny, intelligent, witty
Exactly.
Kids,
and so, so and yeah. when you bring in like the sweet Miley Grace, it's like, well, they can't all, it can't be all bad. Like, I saw him interact with her.
Yeah. And he does really, really well with her.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. They're an interesting group. I think it'll give me a little bit more context once I see her and him actually interacting with one another.
That's
true. At this point, we've only heard them talk about the other person, but,
right.
you know, it,
right.
it could go south.
It could. It could. They might just be both in love with the situation and not with the other person.
Right. Definitely. Okay. So let's talk about Chevelle and Quaylin. Quaylon. We still haven't decided. They actually had a pretty short segment, but Chevelle and Quaylandria patiently wait for Quaylin to exit the prison. They both jump up and down when they think they see him, but his mother gets to him first, and they share a long and joyful hug. His mom cries as she holds him, and Chevelle rubs her back. Quaylin finally gets a chance to hug and kiss Chevelle. They do a little what they refer to as a three-huggy, as Quaylin tells us he just wants family and access for his future. So that was pretty much it, was we really just got to see Quaylin get released. What I thought was kind of a smart move on his part, but also interesting choice, was the fact that he hugged his mom first. So if you are being released from prison and your mom and new girlfriend you barely know are there, who do you go to hug first?
I would like to think it would probably be my mom, because it's new girlfriend I haven't met. If it was, you know, like something, another situation, if it was like mother of my children, then, you know, current wife or something like that, that's a different situation, right? That changes things. But
new girlfriend.
Yeah. The mom who visited me at the hospital after I got shot, and that was the last time she saw me, like, outside of prison. That's probably the better option. And at least, and to be fair, Chevelle seems to understand that. She didn't seem like offended or put out that he was like, oh, you went to your mom first?
Yeah. That's why I thought it was really sweet that Chevelle was like rubbing her mom's or his mom's back, you know, because it was just like, yes, like she's supportive. And I thought that was like a really sweet gesture. And I think it really kind of goes to show that I don't see them like competing with one another just to be like, I want to win. And I want to win, you know, who Quaylin decides to live with. You know, like, I want to win. I want him to live in Kansas City. I want him to live in Texas. Because how many times have we seen petty people who make it about them and winning instead of thinking about bigger picture, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm thinking of last year, what was her name? Cheryl and Josh.
Oh,
was
gosh.
Thing, right?
Yes, Josh and Cheryl and Josh's mom.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're at odds with the mom. You're trying to put the child in between. Well, I don't want to say child, but son.
Yeah,
the Josh
son.
Josh is not a child, right? But he acted like a child, but they put Josh in between, like it was either choosing his mom or Cheryl. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it was just petty, you know?
Right.
Cheryl's mom, it was kind of like you both could have won in a sense, because it wasn't even about him having to decide between where he was going to live. But they were just being petty because mom just didn't want her son with Cheryl, you know? And Cheryl just wanted to get mom out of the picture.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, by the way, for the reference, it's either a group hug or a family hug. We don't need, I don't need anything with my new girlfriend and my mom to be a three anything. Just,
a little three huggy.
You started with three and I'm like, wait a second, hold on, stop. Oh, okay. Like, group hug, family hug, both cool. Like, those don't bring to mind anything else that I don't want to think about.
Oh, goodness. All right. Who do we have next?
All right. Let's go to Tyrese and Shonda, but really just Tyrese again.
Yes. Right.
All right. So Tyrese is picking up his kids to take them to a friend's house for a social gathering. For some reason, his car has no license plates and he's holding a walkie-talkie while he's in the driver's seat. I assume it has to do with production, but it was weird. He knows that his friends and family don't know all that much about Shonda, and since she's being released in 2 days, he thinks now is the time to tell them some more of the details. He's worried that his kids won't accept Shonda, and he also tells us that he's been divorced for 19 years and was getting lonely with the bachelor lifestyle, but ultimately, his children will just want him to be happy. While he's at the party talking to a friend about Shonda's age, his son, Lil Ty, comes into the conversation and learns some more about Shonda. The first thing he learns is that she's white. He had assumed that she was black, which he tries to play cool, but is obviously bothered by. Tyresha, his daughter, comes into the conversation then. She wants to know what Tyrese would do if they didn't like Shonda. Now that the conversation is in the full swing, Tyrese is ready to, and he's already getting heated about even the prospect of his kids rejecting Shonda. So he starts to come all the way clean. He tells them that she's 28, which is, aka, by the way, the same age as Lil Ty, and even shows them a picture of the two of them together. At this point, it seems like the kids, especially Lil Ty, have made a determination. She is just out to take advantage of him. Tyrese feels like he's being disrespected and then it pretty much devolves into a shouting match where Tyrese essentially ends with, you can't tell me what to do. You don't pay my bills. Okay. Then Tyrese shows up in the throwaway commercial segment where we see another staple of a Love After Lockup franchise, shopping for lingerie in the sex shop.
God.
It's like the wedding dress shopping on 90 Day Fiancé, but Love After Lockup has the lingerie shopping. Tyrese says that Shonda told him one of the first orders of business following her release is to get out of the prison granny panties and into something sexy, which is all good for Tyrese. He notes that the shop has some wild stuff, but he doesn't want to get anything too freaky so to scare her off. But he's very confident that the sex is going to be great. All right. So I usually try to avoid bringing up people's names, you know, things that are choices, things that are not choices. But in this case, it is a main cast member's choice. Tyrese named his kids Tyrese and Tyresha.
Yes. I was just going to bring that up. It does make me kind of feel like, you know, this didn't George Foreman do that?
Yeah, too? He had like six Georges.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or some variation of George.
I think all the boys were George, and I think like there was Georgia. Georgina. Yeah, Georgia, Georgina. Like there were things like that too.
Georgine.
It's like friggin' Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Grandpa Joe and Grandma Josephine. Like, why did they get married?
Yeah, I wonder a little bit, like, if they've done any studies about if there's like a narcissist kind of situation here where you need to name your kids or anything you name some kind of variation of your own name, because he really does, just in general, like just even knowing him so far, he does seem to think very highly of himself.
He definitely thinks very highly of himself, and it's like one of those things. I'm not a huge fan. I personally would not have chosen to have a junior, right? I don't have any boys, but if I did, like, my name was off the list. Like, that was not on the list, right? Sure. I was not doing that. And so, but I kind of I'll give people one. Like, I get, okay, you wanted to have a junior, you have a junior, right? But then, like, after one, like, two kids, like, three kids, what are you doing? Like,
yeah. So, like, Lil Ty,
Lil Ty is fine. Yeah,
Lil Ty Jr., right? Because that's probably why.
He's Lil Ty because our Tyrese is Big Ty. Sure, absolutely.
Right. Mm-hmm. Sure. So I get that, but poor Tyresha.
I know. Yeah. I mean, and it's not, thankfully, it's not like a name that's as unusual enough that, like, if, you know, you met her and you're like, she's like, oh, my name's Tyresha, you'd be like, where did that name come from? Like,
right.
It's a normal enough name that outside of the context of, yeah, my dad's name is Tyrese, then you're like, oh, okay, it's fine. Yeah. But yeah, I just didn't get it. But I also didn't get, how defensive he is. It got really heated really fast.
Oh, sure. Yeah, he definitely is, because he, like I said, he seems to think really highly of himself. And I think that also goes into, like, he thinks he's the smartest guy in the room, mm-hmm. you know? So if anyone is questioning anything that he says or does,
right,
that's like almost like an attack on his identity, and he can't deal with that.
Right. Because he's already like, how do I know it's a trick? Because nobody can trick me. That's how I know it's not a trick. Like, end of story. Are you questioning whether I would be tricked or not? This is absurd. Like, yeah. And he went real fast into who pays the bills. It's like, oh. Okay.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. Let's talk about Lil Ty. He seemed to be shocked that Shonda is white, But then he was really quick to kind of backpedal because he didn't want to look racist.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, very. Anytime someone says I'm not racist outright after they said something. Oh,
the other giveaway is when everybody anytime somebody starts talking about skin colors that don't exist, you're like, that person has probably got some racist things going on there.
I don't care if she's brown, purple, pink.
Yeah. As soon as they start listing colors that aren't people's actual races, we have a problem.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that that's automatic, but it just gives you a moment to pause and be like, huh, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I do find it's definitely a different, just because of in terms of social dynamics and stuff. It's definitely a different thing for a black family to be worried about a white person coming to their family than a white family to be working about a black person coming to their family.
Right.
Right. Yeah. It is a different set of concerns. I'm not saying it's right or, you know, I'm not saying it's right. Let's put it but it is a different dynamic, right? Than just like the straight up pure racism that we're everybody's so used to hating.
I feel like he could have just played it off like, if he's that shocked, it's probably because Tyrese has not had a history of dating anyone that
wasn't
black.
That's true. Well, it was funny because he didn't even – it came up because he thought she was black so much. And I guess the name doesn't give it away, right? Shonda could easily be a black person or a white person. That he was just like, oh, whatever. You're dating some nice young black woman. And he was like, wait a second. Like, Lil Ty was the one who brought up race.
Right. Oh, he absolutely was. Yeah. So I feel like he could have played it off like, oh, well, you've never dated a white person before, instead of making it like, I'm not racist, just because I assumed. It's like, well, Dad kind of has a history of not dating white people. And so I'm going to go with that instead of like, that's not why I've said it. I'm not racist.
Right, right. Yeah, it was very, very defensive on it. So I'm curious. Now I'm really curious to see how that's going to go. Right. And I kind of wonder how, you know, racially sensitive Shonda is going to be. Right. Because that's clearly going to be an issue. About how well she fits in and things like that.
I kind of took Tyrese definitely has a type. And the type is big butts.
Big butts.
He really is into big butts.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's maybe that's the other thing is like a butt like Shonda. That's not something terribly common you see as often. So, yeah.
Sure. Okay. Sure.
Let's move on before we say something.
I know.
We're not trying to, but
good call.
It's hard to navigate those waters sometimes. All right. Let's move on to Maurice and Jessica. So Jessica's getting ready as Maurice is practicing what to say to his parole officer, trying to convince them to let him move to Las Vegas immediately with Jessica. They are driving to his parole officer, and Maurice is looking around LA with different eyes, and he is eager to move away, even though he will miss his 9-year-old daughter, who hasn't been able to see really grow up. But Maurice realizes that he is lucky as he reminisces on other people he knows who've died by the age of 25. Maurice says he never wants to go back to prison. He's concerned that he's on strike 2 of 3, so one more mistake and his ass is grass. So he wants to get out of LA, away from the crime and temptation. Unfortunately, his parole transfer request has not been approved yet, so he cannot leave California until it goes through a formal process that might take months. Maurice is frustrated and agitated, and both of them are concerned that Maurice is in danger if he stays in LA. Maurice then just tells Jessica, you know, we should just go to Vegas and just whatever, we should just go, and he doesn't even care about the consequences at this point.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So if you're Maurice, what do you do in this situation? Do you stay in LA where it's very easy for you to, because let's be real here, Maurice was in a gang. And if you're in a gang, you either exit via death or prison, right? And then, and even prison, you're not really.
When you come back out,
you got to play the game still, right?
Right.
So that's why he doesn't want to stay in LA. He knows Vegas is a chance for him to kind of avoid his gang situation.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, he's breaking the rules. So I understand this is a difficult situation.
Yeah, okay, so I feel like there should be like a medium, like something like I feel like he can be in LA, but not be in that. LA is big, and he just has to be in,
for sure.
And he just has to be in LA County. Like he doesn't have to be in Compton, right?
Right.
He could go all the way to the edge, so he's almost in San Bernardino County. Like, what's the farthest away I can move from this? And still,
he could go to Koreatown. Just hang out with the Koreans.
He's just got to, because in theory, he's just got to do it for 2 months, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and I feel like, I don't know what the situation is. It would be ideal if Jessica could do it with him, right? Wherever he, if he's got to get put up somewhere 2 months, I would want to stay away from the family. I want to stay with it, away from anybody who could connect me with anybody I was with before prison, just to, you know, get as far away as legally. Because, no, you can't break the rules. They're going to catch you breaking the rules. And if you leave the state, like if you leave L.A. County, which he said he couldn't do.
Right.
Yeah. That might be a slap on the wrist. But I feel like if you leave a state, they're just putting you back in, jail.
Yeah, definitely. Because it looks like you're trying to escape probation in general.
Right, right. I mean, especially when it's already going. And I don't know what, you know, because it's so weird because every one of these cases, every person is different, right? Like, we had it before. Lindsay got released to a completely different state, but she's in federal prison, right? Because he's talking about the Federal Bureau of Prisons. He's in a California prison, right? So he can't just get released anywhere. It's got to be California. But then Quaylen is getting out of a state prison too in Missouri, and he can apparently move to Texas if he wants to. And there's no talk about here. So it's like, it's such a complicated like mishmash of systems that are on top of each other. That's like, I'm not even sure. I don't know. Like, and I'm a smart person, but like, so having these people try to navigate it when they get out seems crazy.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like, did he do this very last minute?
Right.
Because I feel like that's the other reason why Quaylen has to know where what decision he's made, right?
Uh-huh.
Because he probably had to, well, I guess only if it was Texas, right?
Right.
Because is he still in Missouri?
Right. And then there's that weird situation where he keeps saying Kansas, but I don't know if he means Kansas City, right?
Right.
Because like Chevelle's card says Missouri. But he keeps saying he wants to go to Kansas, but because there's certainly part of Kansas City that's in Kansas and part of Kansas City that's in Missouri. Like, so, and now there's a state line involved. So it's all very confusing.
Right. So I don't know. Is this just a matter of Maurice wasn't kind of planning ahead? Because it seems to me he could have applied to be released and had his transfer earlier, right?
Right.
I mean, they've been married for at least 2 years. So you would think that he would have told them 2 years ago.
Yeah, that this is where I want to go. But they might have been like, well, no, you can't. You're not allowed to fill out the parole paperwork until you have a release date. And they might have given a release date that was like, oh, it's in 2 weeks. And he's like, well, then how am I supposed to get this paperwork in? Like,
yeah, I guess that's true, too. But, yeah, that seems like a very valid action plan, Mr. O. Just stay out of Compton, because he did seem to make it sound like it was Compton specifically that was gonna get him in trouble.
Right But that's the problem, is he has no place to stay in LA outside of Compton. He's calling his auntie and whatever, like, so I feel like that's got to be on her, that she's got to like foot the bill and get him a place for 2 months somewhere else.
Yeah
All right,
I feel I was gonna say, I feel like Jessica has a job, so maybe she could help out with that.
Right All right. So speaking of other people who have to go places, John and Christiana.
Oh, goodness.
So when we start, Christiana is still changing behind the giant quilt and wondering if she can go through with the ceremony. John tells us that they only have 8 minutes left to complete the ceremony and then get on the road, or else she'll be late to the halfway house. Spoiler alert, that don't happen. Which could pose some huge problems with her parole. But Christiana says that she likes to fly by the seat of her pants, so she's in for the quickie wedding. They start the ceremony, which is a native ceremony, where Christiana has no idea what's going on. In fact, it's actually John's first native ceremony, since apparently he did not plan any of his other three weddings. As the ceremony ends and Christiana says they are doing an interview where Christiana says she's overwhelmed with emotions, John tells us that they're going to be about a half hour late, assuming they drive 80 miles per hour. So they throw everything in the back of a truck. And Christiana's nervous because she knows that being late will get her a major violation, which is the first step in losing her parole. And she knows a lot about losing her parole because she's never actually made it through a parole and has always ended up back in jail. So John is on the road, vape in one hand, steering wheel in the other hand, weaving in and out of traffic and pushing the limits of how fast this truck can go. While Christiana, also vape in hand, is already having a married person squabbles about which way to go on the interstate. As if a situation weren't already unsafe enough, Christiana decides that now is a good time to change into some clothes that John has gotten for her. So she covers up the camera and changes in front of John, who is glad to, you know, get an eyeful because they had to skip the mobile honeymoon due to time constraints. After she changes, they pull up to the halfway house in Dubuque, which she is not very excited for. She tells us that she has been in this particular halfway house 4 times before, and each time didn't make it through because the whole place is full of drug users and drug dealers. And she feels like she's just being set up to fail yet again, especially since she's already going to be in hot water for being late. All right, so let's start here. We see him in the car. You've seen the way John looks when he's driving. Would you trust him to drive anywhere at 80 miles per hour?
Oh, no, absolutely not. My first thought was, why on earth did you throw all that crap back in your truck, right? And you kind of see, like, pieces of it kind of flying out of the back of the truck. You know, like, bits of material. Like, I don't know if there was, like, a wood chunk. But, like, it just seems like that isn't very aerodynamic in the first place.
Sure.
It's probably slowing you down a little bit.
It didn't look like literally anything was strapped down in the back of that truck.
No, it didn't. It just seems like, just leave it. It was just a pile of wood. What are you going to do with it later anyway?
Right. And to me, it seems like that kind of set the thing up for the whole plan. As like, man, shouldn't you have just had the ceremony closer to the halfway house so you had like more of a figure out of how much time you have, what we can do? Like, do we have to abandon this? Can we abort instead of like trying to do this out? Yeah.
Mr. O, that's too smart. That requires too much planning for John.
No, instead he's going to go and I have a personal, that's a personal, I wouldn't say pet peeve because it kind of infuriates me. That thing of, oh, we're going to be late. Better drive 90 miles an hour. I'm like, no. Better late than dead, John. Like,
plus, I think people really overestimate how much time they actually gain by driving really fast.
That's totally true. Totally true.
Right? Like so people go, oh, yeah, like, well, we're going to drive 90 miles an hour. Okay, so you get another extra, 10 miles per hour?
Yeah, basically.
All right.
Well, I mean, if it depends on, if you're going at 80, I mean, I would generally go 70. So like 20 miles per hour if you're going 90, right? But that's so you save yourself, 20 minutes?
Yeah, if that.
So, I mean, and they're doing that. It's completely unsafe. They're weaving in and out. I mean, at least Christiana was on board.
The weaving, I think, also really, I mean, 90 miles per hour going straight is definitely different than 90 miles per hour weaving in and out.
Right.
Okay. I can say that just even from running, I would say, you know, sometimes like I'll have a pretty fast pace, but if I'm doing a race and I have to avoid people.
Dodge in and out. Yeah.
Yes. And if I'm weaving in and out. Yeah, it feels like I'm like, oh, yeah, my pace is actually better than what I'm training. But it's like, but then why is my total time so much longer? It's because my distance wise, I end up adding an extra quarter of a mile because I'm weaving in and out of people.
Yeah. I can totally, totally get that. But like, it's just so unsafe because I see it here like all the time. Like, and she talked about traffic, and I don't think the traffic in Dubuque, Iowa is anywhere like the traffic, you know, in the Baltimore, Washington area or anywhere like the traffic in Southern California. Like these are different animals, but I see it all the time. People who try to like weave it through, like, oh, I'll get through this traffic by weaving. It's like, no, you won't. Like we're all just stopped here.
I think it just makes people feel like they're being more productive. Right. It makes them feel like they're doing something to get somewhere faster. But I think when it really comes down to it, it's not actually getting them to go anywhere faster. Right.
No.
But it's that perception. And I feel like that's why people continue to do that. Can we talk about the validity of their marriage?
Interesting point.
I was going to say, so for me, I've never been married, so I don't know the details of this. But it was my understanding that you're supposed to have like a marriage certificate filed or something before you actually have the ceremony.
That is true.
Right. And mm-hmm. so she's just hearing about this right now. They don't have any paperwork in. They don't have a marriage certificate in at this point. And so if it's this native ceremony, like how valid is this wedding? Is it just in the eyes of the law it's not valid, but in the eyes of his community it is?
Yeah, that's a good point because you're totally right. Like a huge chunk of marriage law, right? Mm-hmm. And even like in a Catholic wedding, I'll get to, but is like making sure that the woman is not being forced into a marriage that she doesn't want to be in.
Yeah.
Like that's a huge chunk of the protections, which is why when you go, at least when I did it, when I pulled my marriage certificate and I got married, yeah, you had to go. They don't give it to one person. You have to go right. together.
And isn't there like things you have to get like blood work done and stuff to prove that you're not related?
I think we had to sign that we weren't related, but there's no blood work.
Okay.
And I don't know if that's because we were like born. I don't know. There was definitely no blood work. But again, that's going to vary state to state, right?
Sure.
But we definitely both had to be there. We definitely had to sign an affidavit or something that we weren't married. It has to get notarized with you both mm-hmm. there. And then, you know, and then it does again when you go to the officiant, they just sign the certificate at the bottom. Like, yeah, we carried out the ceremony.
Yeah.
But like, because even in the Catholic Church, I do know enough about that. That's my background is I was raised Catholic, is like, that's literally the first thing they do when the priest starts the wedding. It's like, are you here of your own free will?
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Maybe that was being said in form of the song at the beginning, but Christiane, I didn't know what was going on.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's an excellent point because there's no – I wouldn't say no way because, again, Iowa is different than Maryland. It's different than California. It's different than everywhere.
Sure. Everybody,
there's 50 different rules that go into it, right? But I know where I was that – and I'm pretty sure in North Carolina too mm-hmm. that you have to go because a lot of people, it's a really big pain in the butt. If you're doing like a destination wedding or something to get the, because you have to get it in the county, at least mine was, the county you were getting married in, right? That's okay. where it gets filed. So even though if you don't live in that county, like we had to go from one Maryland county to another Maryland county to get it. So we had to go all the way across one, but it was a pain in the butt to go there. But, you know, it wasn't a big deal. But if I was like in another state, you know, if I had to fly there, that would be, I don't know how you do that.
Yeah. So, I don't know if they're actually legally married at this point.
Or just spiritually married.
Mm-hmm. Right. If it was just a spiritual marriage, I could kind of see how Christiana's kind of like, yeah, okay, yeah, sure, why not? Let's go ahead and get married. Like, what kind right. of lasting, you know, consequences would I really have with that? I can kind of see how, you know, that low stakes makes it easier for her to say, okay, let's do right. this. I think she's actually really cute when she changed out of her prison clothes. It was just like, it was like a whole new Christiana.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty much everybody is like that. It's like, oh, your clothes fit now. And they're like casual yeah. clothes and not like, yeah. you know, ratty prison clothes that are just like way too big for you. And it's like, oh, okay, yeah, I see it. Yeah.
Right. But, okay, so the last thing I wanted to say about them is Christiana, I could just feel how anxious she was because, uh-huh. and I, especially as someone who personally hates being late, like I mm-hmm. hate being late. It stresses me out. The kinds of nightmares in my life that I have are usually of me being late to something. I don't like it. Causes high stress and anxiety for me. But I kind of feel like if I was in that situation, I would be like seething on the inside, like, this is your fault.
Oh, absolutely.
You're the one who absolutely. Wanted to get married. You're the one making me late and uh-huh. being super resentful of the guy who's like created this situation for us.
Me too. I would be the same way. I'm going to say, because I'm the same way about being late. It gives me so much anxiety, right?
Yeah, I don't like it.
I don't like it. And that's why I don't like stupid, like parties and stuff where it's like, you can't be on time, but you don't know how late to be. I hate that so much.
Yeah. You know, it's funny too, because I'm pretty punctual in my life, unless, and the caveat to this is I won't be or make as much of an effort if I know I'm meeting up with people who are not. Because mm-hmm. it does. It sucks to be the first person and sitting there waiting forever right. for everyone else to get
and
there.
And I find myself, because I'm so punctual, if I either I'm the first one there waiting for everybody else, or I'm mm-hmm. sitting at my house just being like, all right, when can I leave? All right, when can I leave?
Yes.
All right, when can I leave? Not doing anything, way. Still waiting for these people. So yeah. Drives me crazy.
Yeah, I'm the same way. So when I host a party, I usually tell people like, so if I do, because I usually do like a Thanksgiving dinner. Mm-hmm. I tell people 7:30, or is it the other way around? No, I think I tell people 7 o'clock, but in my head, when I'm cooking, I'm like, okay, aim for 7:30.
Sure.
It usually works out, but yeah.
Right.
All right, last up we have is Shawn and Destiny. So Destiny and Shawn are in the car, and Destiny feels self-conscious about how she smells, and she says she needs to take a shower as Shawn tries to dad joke around and enthusiastically agrees. She continues to sift through the clothes Shawn has bought her, and she sounds genuinely grateful for all he has done for her so far. She's tried to put on some makeup as she talks about meeting her mom and sister for lunch. She's nervous about what her mom will say about her weight and any other mean things she might see. But Destiny is confident about how Shawn will get along with her family, as she thinks he's a great man and he's too good to be true. She meets up with her mom, Denise, and her sister, Brittany. Destiny has a sip of what looks like a chocolate martini and reminisces on the hooch in prison and all the baking she did. Denise admits in an interview that even though Destiny has been a difficult child, she regrets how she handled her and wants to be better and more supportive from here on out. Denise does not want Destiny to go to Vegas with Shawn because she thinks that, oh, she doesn't think that environment will keep Destiny on the straight and narrow. Denise is also suspicious of Shawn, who seemingly picked a name off a prison dating site. I don't know if she's wrong, and thinks that he is choosing a child and there must be something wrong with him. Destiny mm-hmm. and her sister excuse themselves to go to the bathroom, and Destiny's mom takes the short moment to interrogate Shawn and ask him about his family. We find out that Shawn had originally told Destiny that he had 2 children, but he confesses to Denise that he really has 6. Denise then asks what his intentions are, and he says marriage. Denise offers a half warning that Destiny is going to chew him up and spit him out. Brittany is also suspicious of Shawn and says we don't get a nice curated rap sheet for him, so we don't know what's wrong with him. Brittany says he could be a pervert and we just don't know it. Destiny admits to Brittany that she likes him, but commitment scares her, and she recognizes that she sometimes can sabotage relationships, which she almost immediately does when they get back to the table, and tells Shawn that she didn't like the clothes as she playfully whacks his arm. And her mother calls her out for elder abuse, which then Brittany asks him, how old are you really? And he says, 45, which is news to Destiny, who says she thought he was 36, and he goes, no. You just assumed that. And Destiny insists that that is actually what he told her. All right. So I can kind of see the self-sabotaging. Do you think that Destiny is really into Shawn at this point?
I don't know. I mean, I think that she's still in the process of.
Yes.
Adjusting to the Shawn that she had in her head that wrote her letters to the prison and was really nice to her and sent her all the stuff.
He's such a lying dummy, right?
Lying dummy that we know outside of
yes. prison. And stuff, it's just like, this person's going to figure it out pretty quickly because they've been talking online for, what, 3 months? Is this the 3-month or the 7-month? I can't remember.
I think this is the 3-month one.
Yeah, so 3 months. So it's like in 3 months' time, she is going to figure out pretty quickly that you are, what, 9 years older than you told her?
9 years.
And that you have 4 more children than what you said. You literally have 66% more kids.
And his plan was, I mean, I know it's an overused phrase, but his plan was to gaslight her.
Yeah.
Like, I thought you were 36. Nah, you made that up yourself.
You assumed that.
Who assumes specifically 36?
Yes, that is a very specific age. Okay, how I kind of see that going down, and I can, yes, like I said, like I can see this going down. How old are you? Well, how old do you think I look? 36? You're so cute or something, and changing the subject or saying something that like doesn't really confirm or deny. And so then she goes, yeah, you told me you were 36. And he goes, no, you just assumed that. Well, because you allowed her to assume that and never corrected her.
I don't even know that he's that smart. I think it's like...
I don't think so either.
I think it's like that Simpsons episode where Homer found the angel and he's like, if you look closely, you'll see I never use the word angel everywhere. And he's standing in front of a giant sign that says angel. Like, so I think that's the way... Oh, I never said that. It's like, yeah, you did, dude. Like,
oh, yeah.
And then he had nothing. He had nothing for the six kids. He had no plan to get out of that lie. He's like, I guess, yeah, that's what I told her earlier. And because
I didn't want to scare her off. I don't even think he was. Yeah, I don't even think he was intelligent enough to come up with that as an excuse. Why did you lie? I don't know. Two sounded better.
She's hot. Yeah. Why did they show us? Like, why do we have so much of her in her bra this time? I didn't understand that. Like, she's having that conversation with her sister, and they're, like, doing this whole shot where she's taking off her clothes, and we're looking at it in the mirror. I'm like, I don't
need... The only thing that I can think of is that, and hopefully I'm giving production the benefit of the doubt here, is to really show that there really is nothing for her to be self-conscious about, right? So, mm-hmm. like, her whole thing is that she is feeling bad about her weight. And, I mean, her in her bra, like, to me, there was, like, you are at a healthy weight. Like, yeah, maybe you could tone up a little bit, but, sure. you know, like, you are a healthy size. There is nothing wrong with your size. There is nothing to be self-conscious about.
Yeah, I just – her family did a number on her, like, for real.
Oh, because, they did.
Like, first of all, like, it seemed pretty – I wouldn't want to go straight from prison to the lunch. Like, could we, like, stop and let me take a shower? Like, legit, like, I want to take a shower.
Right,
like,
right.
Totally. I would imagine coming out of prison, taking a shower by myself would be like, this is like the first thing I want to do. Let's, right. I want a shower to myself. Let's go with all the hot water as long as I want. Right. I'm doing this. I'll be all over that. But then, like, her two primary concerns getting released from prison after how many years was, I have to put all my makeup on.
Yeah.
And I'm worried my mom's going to call me fat.
Yeah.
Like, yikes.
When she said that, it made me feel so sad because I feel like that's the reason why she's so self-conscious about her weight.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, for Sean, but also because she doesn't want to be judged by her mom. You know? But I thought it was really – I really cross my fingers and hope that Destiny's mom really has kind of seen how her actions have negatively affected Destiny because she does say – you know, like, I have regrets about how I've treated my daughter, how I've handled situations.
Right.
You know?
But
and
sometimes,
she doesn't
want to. Sometimes, man, even like parents that are borderline abusive are mm-hmm. just like they say that. And their response is, I've just been too lenient. I let her get away with too much. So I have to do more criticizing now. Like,
I don't think that's how she took it. I really.
I hope not.
Like I said, I want to hope for the best, but. I kind of like, I thought her, how she dealt with everything was like what a good mom should have. You know, she was suspicious of Sean. She was supportive of Destiny. She was really trying to protect Destiny from mm-hmm. this guy, you know?
Right, right.
This liar, well, this predator.
Was, I mean, she was in prison in Sacramento, right?
Dublin? No, I'm thinking Lindsay's from Dublin. Sorry.
Yeah, Lindsay was in Dublin. But yeah, so there are three people in California prisons. Interesting. But
yeah.
Another person who's going from California to Las Vegas.
Las Vegas, right.
In this one, it was like, it was very much, she was like, no, Las Vegas is more trouble than here.
Right. Well, right? I think the way she's thinking of it is that I think when you think of Las Vegas, you think of all the partying. And let's be real here, Destiny has a problem with partying.
Right. Yeah.
So if you yeah, put that
her
kind
problems
of
are not the
there.
Same as Maurice's problems. It's not
right.
It's
not gang
partying.
Activity.
Right.
Right. It's yeah, being around partiers and uh-huh. you know, drinking leads to drugs, and then drugs leads to wanting more drugs, and then you know, doing criminal things to get the drugs.
To get the drugs, right? Which is the pattern. So I can see that. I can see that. I mean, it's literally called Sin City. So I see where she's coming with that.
Yeah. Okay. So Destiny has like definitely two sides to her that I feel like we've seen kind of on and off.
Sure.
Like I was very turned off by Destiny when we first heard from her, the way she was super demanding on the phone call with Sean.
Right.
Like, did you get this stuff for me? Did you, I need my makeup. I need, you know, my clothes, and incredibly demanding. Right. And then when we see Destiny at the very beginning, when he picks her up, she is just so appreciative. Thank mm-hmm. you so much. This is so great. These tacos are great. You know, like,
right.
just very different than demanding, right? It just seemed like mm-hmm. she was really grateful. And then, like, when she comes out of the bathroom, she's back to, these clothes suck.
None of this
shit fit.
You know,
like,
yeah,
I didn't like, whatever. And then she's, it's like, then you see this glimpse of, oh, yeah, there's the demanding Destiny again.
Right. Well, the Destiny that I was most, and this wasn't even this week, this was last week when she talked about mm-hmm. her ankle brace, right?
Yeah.
They talked in an interview and she kind of said, like, they gave me an ankle brace, so I cut that shit off and sent it back to him. Like, she
right.
didn't sound remorseful about that even a little bit. She was like, isn't that a clever, awesome thing that I did? Even to this day, I'm still proud that I did that shit. Like,
right.
That's not a good sign.
Definitely like a fuck you moment.
Yeah.
So I definitely get these glimpses of Destiny where I'm kind of like, I think the nice Destiny, she's really sweet. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, let's be real here. Chocolate martini, and then she moved on to another glass of a cocktail. It looked like kind of a strawberry uh-huh. daiquiri type.
Yep.
It's like, it seems like this could also be affecting how she's treating Sean. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's a very slippery slope because it seems like this is a party girl. And like we just talked about kind of the progression of everything. It starts with drinking. Drinking then leads to like drugs,
right.
you know?
Well, I mean, I think you're right. I think she might just turn into a really mean drunk, and she might, now that she's out, she might just be drunk all the time. Like,
yeah. So it's kind of unfortunate because she just seems so sweet when we like first met her in person.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, and I also can see Sean setting her off.
Right. But I mean, I feel like we all know people like that, right? We all know people who are so cool to hang out with when they're sober. And they're like a pain in the ass, and you hate them when they're like high or drunk or whatever. And and so like when you start hanging out and they're like, dude, let's go get high. I'm like, I don't want to hang out with you when you're high. Oh my God. Can we just stay sober? Because you're a lot of fun when you're sober. Like So it's something, I think it's something we've all seen.
Right. I just don't see this couple being super successful because there's so many things, mm-hmm. right? The fact that Sean's a liar. The fact that Destiny is going to turn into another person when she's been drinking. The fact that it doesn't really seem like Destiny. I don't know. My question to you was, did you really think, did you think Destiny was into Sean? I kind of felt like she wasn't, you know, and it's one of those things where she's slowly getting there. It wasn't like she met him and was like, oh, I don't like this guy. He looks much older. Like, mm-hmm. just adverse reaction to him. I think she's slowly getting there. The more she finds out about him, the more she's going to dislike him.
Right.
And kind of fall out of this, like, oh, I'm in love with him.
But she's going to, it depends on how she reacts to that, because she has him under her thumb.
Like,
if she
wants to, absolutely.
He'll do whatever. Like,
well, yeah. So I don't think Destiny's mom is wrong. She is going to chew him up and spit him out. I can see that. Because even though it may have started off like innocently enough, I definitely feel like she's also going to look at the situation and be like, I'm going to take this guy for a ride. Like, what can I get out of him?
At this point, yeah. I don't like this guy. Yeah. It's not very much. But, like, I could totally see him getting arrested buying drugs for her. Like, I could totally see that happening.
Oh, absolutely. Because he's dumb enough to do that as well. Okay. So, that pretty much wraps that up. So, who was your student of the week?
My student of the week was Maurice.
Okay. Oh, that's funny.
I mean, he seemed like he was honestly trying to make things better. And he like really was trying to stay out of prison, and he was trying to take steps himself. He wasn't trying to let the environment around him, like, and the people mm-hmm. around him keep him out of prison. He was like, I need to do these things to help myself. And so I liked that step forward for him. I thought he was really trying to keep himself out of trouble.
Okay, so that's interesting. So I'll go ahead and fast forward and say that my dunce was actually Maurice. So the reason why I had Maurice as a dunce was I just felt like he needed a huge attitude adjustment. Like when they were driving through LA, I just felt like he was, and I get it, he has negative associations. He, you know, doesn't think the best of like this environment, but he was just being so negative about everything. And then I also didn't like how when he found out that he didn't get his way, how he just got angry. And so I just kind of felt like just his reactions to everything just didn't seem like the healthiest way to react to the situation that he's been given.
Sure, sure. I guess I kind of saw it as more of him at the beginning of a journey, actually trying to take this journey, because he's not where he needs to be yet in terms of attitude, in terms of dealing with setbacks and things like that. But I, so I guess it's just a matter of what your perspective is on that.
Sure.
So who was your student of the week then?
Oh, student of the week. You know, it's always hard to up with a student of the week. But I would say Scott. And I would say the reason why is because he just treats everyone in this episode with a lot of respect and kindness. You know, the people that he was on the phone with. I thought it was really actually very nice of him to treat the limo driver to the dinner. He really did not have to do that at all. You know, and he shared cake and steak with the limo driver. And if I was the limo driver, I would love to have cake and steak. That would make my career, I think.
I was thinking about it. I was like, so I feel like limo driver, that guy was good, right? That is exactly what you want out of a limo driver.
Oh, sure.
Like, so I feel like it's one of those things. I feel like limo driver and bartender, both you get weird situations like that where you get those confessionals from people. You get the people who have, oh, I have this steak and it ain't going to happen. Is it going to eat it? Oh, did you want the rest of his scotch? Like, I feel like that happens not all the time, but definitely more often than at a typical job, especially if you're like Larry and you have exactly the right attitude, exactly the right amount of curiosity. Like, you know, he wasn't pushing Scott on stuff. He wasn't trying to make him uncomfortable, but he was like, hey, man, what's going on?
Everything all right? I definitely was a counselor type. All right. So who was your dunce?
My dunce was Tyrese, right? Because he talked, especially the way he talked a big game that he didn't want to follow through on, including, I really care what my kids think. I wanted to accept her. And as soon as it kind of became like, maybe they won't, maybe his kids won't be okay with that, he was like, shut up. I'm in charge. Don't you disrespect me. And like just screaming at them, like shouting them down for expressing their opinions, which he said he wanted to have. So,
oh, goodness.
Just didn't like it.
All right. Okay. What about your life lesson?
All right. So this is a more serious one, but I feel like it came up a lot of times in this episode. And it's not like a lesson for any individual person, but it's kind of like, I don't know, my overall thoughts. It's like the prison system is broken. Like, because we're looking at this, all of these people are ex-cons who are being released, right? Which means they've like, whatever, quote unquote, paid their debt, right? They've served their restitution, right? They're supposed to be full, you know, citizens, you know, upstanding people that we want them to be, right?
Yeah.
And that so many of them are just being set up to fail. Like we see at least three of them, like Maurice and Christiana have people that can, you know, move them away and put them in healthier situations that keep them from doing the same stuff that got them arrested, and neither of them are allowed to go with them.
Yeah.
Right. Both of them are forced into worse situations. And, you know, Lindsay has people who are looking out. She has a daughter, she has a mother, she has a whatever fiance that are there to look out for her, and they can't even fucking tell her they don't even know where she is.
Yeah.
Right. And so I know it's just a trashy reality show, but I know this week in particular was like, what a fucked up system. Like, how is this supposed to work? It's like, it's just setting so many people up for failure.
Yeah. It is especially discouraging when you hear about halfway houses or even prisons for that matter.
Oh, yeah.
Like just being riddled with drugs. And it's just kind of like, this is what gets most people into trouble in the first place. Mm-hmm. And it's like, why don't you protect these people by keeping these things away from them?
Right. And you know, and I don't want to judge too much, but most of the time, you know who brings it is the people who work for the prison. It's like, and this isn't even getting into like the huge racial disparity and racial injustice that goes into a prison system. Sure. It's just a huge mess.
It is. Oh, goodness. All right. So my life lesson, a little bit more lighthearted after that heavy one. Don't ever try to portray yourself to be something you're not when you're online dating. You either attract the wrong person or you give the right person the wrong idea about who you really are. And neither makes for the start or a solid foundation for a lasting relationship. So like it does. It confuses me why people like try to portray themselves as I'm adventurous. And it's like, but not really. You just like to you know, Netflix and chill, which is fine. But if you're trying to present yourself as this one kind of person, who are you going to attract? Someone else who's adventurous, and then now you're not on the same page and you're not interested in the same kinds of things. And so it's like, what's the point of that?
Well, I mean, and part of that is, and I think a lot of people, and we've talked about this so many times before too, is like, you have to learn to love yourself before you can like accept or get somebody else's love. Because I feel like a lot of the people do that because they kind of write down the person that they wish they were. I wish I was an adventurous person. I wish I traveled all the time. You know, I wish I didn't watch so much Netflix. But, and then you do. And then you're right, though. But you attract the people. And they don't want to be, and that's the sad part, too, is the number of people that, you know, sit around, the number of couch potatoes that are like, well, what I don't want is a couch potato. And it's like, well, but that's you. And like, they don't want to attract somebody that's like them.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's weird. Yeah.
There was one guy that I dated who definitely presented himself as adventurous and like to be active, right? Mm-hmm. And then every single time he'd be like, oh, can we just like stay in and watch a movie tonight? And he would say it like it was this rare thing. But it was all
we ever
did.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just things like that. But stupid Sean and his lying of his age and, you know.
Like, because that's what the thing is, that Sean doesn't want the person who would truly be attracted to Sean. We know that because he rejected that ex that he's been with for 22 years.
Yeah. Like,
he doesn't want the person. And that's a whole other level of you're never going to find it if what you want is something that's not attracted to you. Like, that's not going to work.
Yeah. Okay. So that about wraps it up for this week.
Uh-huh.
Anything else to add?
I don't think so. So okay. We'll be back next week. Well, we might be up. We'll probably be back early next week, right? That's what we talked about?
Yes. I think we are going to release on Sunday or Monday. One of the two.
One of the two. Yeah.
Yes.
All right. So we will see everybody then with a new episode. All right.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.